celebrated. Human wide dissemination, and it was just a great thing. Webster's Third New International Dictionary.
It is obvious that neither the press nor the individual reporters are specifically named in any of the above orders. The court finds that each of the four defendants has had due notice of these orders. Each of the orders was given wide dissemination by all news media throughout the area. Haynes Sr., a lawyer for the defendant, was a party specifically referred to in both the orders, as was his investigator. The legal effect of the order was brought up in open court on September 6, 1968, by Mr. Haynes, and Mr. Haynes was in the court. Both newspaper reporters received copies of the order of July the 30th, 1968, as did their respective newspapers. Both papers gave prominent publicity to the order of July the 18th, 1968, the amendment of July the 23rd, 1968. The offending article. On September the 12th, 1968, there is an article under the byline of the defendant Charles Edmondson, reporter for the Commercial Field, appeared at the Commercial Field, reporting the defendant Renfro T. Hayes, a private detective employed by Mr. Haynes Sr., as saying last night, September 11, 1968, that the health of James Earl Ray is so threatened by security measures and force at the Shelby County Jail that he may not be able to stand trial as scheduled November 12th. Indirect statement. Hayes compared some of the conditions in Ray's cell with, quote, devices used by communist police agents to destroy the health and balance of their victims, end quote. Hayes spoke of bright lights kept shining night and day, of television cameras constantly monitoring the prisoner, and of uninterrupted lack of privacy. This was an indirect statement. Hayes said, quote, I don't for a moment think Sheriff Bill Morris is trying to drive this guy out of his mind, but it's the effect of this type of surveillance that counts, end quote. On Friday, Mr. Hayes took the witness stand and under oath, denied making each and every statement relating to Ray's treatment in jail. The case has been argued, the court allowed Mr. Edmondson to take the stand. Under oath, he testified that Mr. Hayes made each and every statement in the article attributed to him in both direct and indirect quotes. Quotes. This morning in rebuttal, Mr. Hayes has denied again making the significant quotes as set out in the Edmondson article. Testimony is in direct conflict. It's the duty of the court to determine the credibility of the witnesses and determine the truth of the matter. The court believes Mr. Edmondson has told the truth. It is clear that the above statements are the result of, quote, an interview for publicity and are the account of extrajudicial statements. quote, extrajudicial statements, end quote, prejudicial, quote, prejudicial to a fair trial by an impartial jury in the case, end quote, by an, quote, investigator of a lawyer participating in the case, end quote. On Thursday, September 12, 1968, the evening paper, the Memphis Press Senator, published an article under the byline, Roy Hammer, Press Senator staff writer, stating, among other things, that Haynes Sr. had intimated, quoted, in a Birmingham interview that Ray might not be able to stand trial in November because his health was being jeopardized by intensive security measures in the Shelby County Jail cell. This was an indirect quotation in the third paragraph. The seventh paragraph, quote, in the earlier report, Haynes Sr. was quoted as saying that Ray is undergone, quote, enough to bug anybody, end quote, during his confinement. He said Ray had had two guards, quote, breathing down his neck 24 hours a day, end quote, and sometimes has to cover his eyes against the bright lights, quote, shining on him night and day. She remarked that anything said in open court by a lawyer in a pending case, if relevant and in proper language, is absolutely privileged, and the press has an absolute right to report. Mr. Haynes Sr. took the stand and on cross-examination admitted that he might have stated in Birmingham to some Birmingham reporters, among others, that some of the statements about race treatment in his cell attributed to Haynes and Hamilton's story of September the 12th were true, but all such statements had already been made orally by him, Haynes, in open court. There's surely an obvious difference between making charges and claims in court where there's an adversary proceeding, where the opposing side can challenge the truth of the charges and claim, and sworn proof can be put on to controvert the same under the direction of a judge, and the giving of unsworn statements outside court and extrajudicial statements as to even the identical charges and claims are true, in fact, for the same to be disseminated throughout the community to possible jurors who must ultimately try this case. If the statements as to the treatment, acts, and attitude of the defendant are prejudicial to a fair trial by an impartial jury of the case and are made extrajudicially, that is, outside of the court, they are in violation of the orders of the court, whether made before or after the same. Identical statements are legally because privileged, made in open court or in a pleading trial court. As to the two reporters in the defense of the First Amendment, neither the press communications media nor these two reporters are enjoined either specifically nor by class in the orders of the court. Prior restriction of free speech and freedom of the press has been held to be unconstitutional by Supreme Court. It cannot be doubted, however, that the court has jurisdiction over lawyers participating in the case and their investigators. It's spelled out in Shepard against Maxwell that the court not only has the power to regulate the extrajudicial statements of such parties, but that it is reversible error for the court not to do so if prejudicial publicity results therefrom from such failure. These two newspapers.